Hi everyone, and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. My name's Angelo Valdivia, and with me this week are Oliver Brandt.
Howdy folks.
And dropping by again is moderator of the Vook's Discord, Michael Gonsalves.
Hey guys.
Thank you very much for joining us this week, Michael, taking time out of your very busy schedule, I'm sure, to jump in and talk with us. We've got a great episode lined up for you this week, all about Animal Crossing New Horizons getting closer to realizing a critical function fans have been begging for. A new unofficial handheld to replace every Game Boy gets a price and release window. Then we'll have a quick chat about Paper Mario the Origami King, but first, a huge leak out of Nintendo has opened the floodgates on a ton of secrets about all sorts of games from the Super Nintendo and N64 eras. So, if you've been paying attention to Nintendo news over the last week or so, you'll have seen what's been dubbed the Nintendo Giga Leak, which has unearthed assets, code, and other development materials from a wide range of SNES and N64 games and was dumped onto 4chan last week and continues to be sifted through at the moment. So there is just still so much more information to come. Signs at the moment seem to be pointing to this leak being related to the security breach that occurred back in April, which around that time also saw over 300,000 Nintendo network IDs being compromised, if you remember from one of our earlier episodes. The leak includes source codes for games like Super Mario Kart, A Link to the Past, Yoshi's Island, Ocarina of Time, Super Mario 64, plus loads of others. It also contains prototype builds of games, obviously never meant for public eyes. The leaks appear legitimate due to the sheer volume of information and content, and even Dylan Cuthbert, a developer known for working on 4 Star Fox games and now heads up Q Games, corroborated the Star Fox 2 leak specifically by tweeting his surprise at seeing a tool he made for it. One of his tweets quotes, "WTF, I haven't seen this tool I made for Star Fox 2 for almost 30 years. I wrote it in early C++ to teach myself the language more than anything else. Where the hell have hackers got all this obscure data from?" And finally, while hackers have been excited to learn so much information about Nintendo's history from the leaks, it's also sparked dialogue between out of many veteran developers to the wider public about why this may be problematic and why they aren't specifically in support of the leak, as it publicly displays personal information such as communication logs, programming errors, and prototype assets that weren't intended for use for wider display. So, guys, first of all, what were your reactions to seeing the Giga leak, and how do you feel about it becoming apparent?
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like there's a lot of stuff that happens behind closed doors in game development. And there's just so much that we never get to see. And a lot of that's really absolutely fascinating. It teaches us a lot about how these games were developed, you know, how developers took certain approaches to get to certain outcomes. So there's a lot here that is just absolutely fascinating. Like I'll bring up like one of the main things that, you know, the internet has kind of gone nuts about is, you know, a character model for Luigi has been found for Super Mario 64. Obviously, that wasn't in the retail release. There were lots of rumors all the way back in the day about, you know, if you do this thing 300 times and, you know, stand on your head, you'll unlock Luigi.
You'll get the Yoshi nude patch.
Yeah, so, like, obviously, like, none of that was true, but, like, at some point, clearly, Luigi was intended to be a part of Super Mario 64. So there's all sorts of things like that. I mean, like, everybody's been memeing over the prototype Yoshi from Super Mario World, which is just a nightmare of a creature. But, like,
almost Lovecraftian.
Yeah, but, like, it's the kind of thing. It was like, you know, in an alternate universe, that's the Yoshi that we ended up getting. And, like, this, you know, friendly, puffy Yoshi that we have now could have been, like, the monstrous Yoshi leak. So, like, it's really, really fascinating stuff. And I think, like, from a historical standpoint, like, it's really cool. It's just, obviously, like, we know that this wasn't obtained in any legitimate way because, like, you know, it didn't fall off the back of a truck and somebody just found it and decided to upload it. You know, it's pretty clear that it was part of some sort of hack or, you know, breach of Nintendo's security, which, you know, obviously is illegal, and I don't think anybody here is gonna, you know, condone that kind of behavior. And, like, a lot of the things released have also been, like, you know, problematic to say the least. You know, there's emails back and forth between developers, notes that they left to each other. And, you know, there's been a lot of personal information included in that. And, you know, the results of HR disputes and stuff that, like, really shouldn't be available to the public. Like, these are very private, intimate details that weren't supposed to be for anyone but the people involved. So it definitely presents a problem that, like, all of that is mixed in with it as well. But, like, the content itself is awesome. Like, I think we should see more of this stuff. It just would have been nice if, you know, Nintendo was the one showing us this stuff instead of, you know, somebody who might not have the best interests of the people involved at heart.
On that subject, yeah, of seeing more of that stuff, I definitely think we will be. I don't think this is the last drop of Nintendo leak stuff that's going to come from wherever this stuff came from. I feel like there's a ton more to come, and it'd be really interesting to see how Nintendo reacts going forward. Of course, we don't really know what's going on behind the scenes at Nintendo in regards to this leak, how much investigative work is going into it, how much other things that they might be in the works. But it'd be really interesting to see what else comes out, because there's been some, as I've discussed, some stuff that people have been thinking about for 20, 30 plus years of does this stuff exist? Like the extra assets for the 64DD expansion of Zelda. That was discussed when I was a kid for ages about, is this stuff coming out? Like, does it exist? Like, what's it going to look like? And yeah, it's cool seeing that stuff, but it's just come from not a legal place, unfortunately.
Yeah. So if the wider speculation is to be believed that this came out of the hack that occurred in April, then that means that it took about 3 months for all this kind of content to get released on 4chan, or, you know, just put up on 4chan. So who knows how much more there is to go by in that case. This could just be the result of 3 months of hard work from those people just going through and trying to, you know, sift through whole lots of data, you know, assets, all those kinds of things, compiling different builds of prototypes and things. So yeah, there could be even more to come, you know, to over the next couple of months or so. Who knows what else is in there. Just going back to your point, Ollie, yeah, it is a bit problematic because it's not like, you know, say a published art book that comes out of Nintendo that has developer notes in that. You know, they might have like rough sketches of Yoshi or Mario or something, and then, you know, they break down different aspects of the characters and things. These are specific, you know, private conversations between developers and things like that, where there has, I think some people have noted some, you know, relatively inappropriate comments marked up in some of these things. But again, there were private discussions between developers 30, 40 years ago, almost at this point, for some games. So yeah, it's become like a discussion in ethics. Like, obviously it's illegal, but then people are arguing that now, you know, this is part of an effort to preserve, you know, game history and things like that. But, you know, if it's stolen, then is it, you know, really good enough to use that as an argument?
Yeah, and I think, like, that's definitely an important discussion to have around the ethics of it. Because, like, we know from this that, like, you know, despite what some people might say, like, Nintendo is really, really good at preserving every single aspect of their game. Like, the entire development history is all there, and we can see that now, and, like, there's no reason to believe that, like, they haven't done that for every game that they've developed.
Yeah, well, the fact that, like, they were able to get this information 30 years later,
yeah,
like, says that, you know, yeah, it's been there somewhere.
It isn't like other companies where they try to, like, release a port or some update of their game, like, oh, whoops, I can't find the source code, it's completely gone.
Well, that's it, right? Like, how many games don't get remastered or they have to get completely rebuilt or something like that because the source code has been, you know, deleted or just lost time?
Yeah, I mean, like, one of the more recent examples of that was the Final Fantasy VIII remaster, which could have been, like, a really interesting remaster if they'd, you know, kept the source code. Instead, they've had to work with a company that specializes in, you know, emulation hacks and, you know, like, reverse engineering and stuff like that. And it's, like, it's nice that, like, we have companies that do specialize in these things and can, like, you know, give new life to old games. But, like, it's absolutely nothing compared to what you'd be able to do with the source code. And, like, trying to hack together something that you know, might be a little bit better in some areas, but like has all these other drawbacks because you're still working with like the original release. It's not ideal. So like it's good to know, like, if anything from this, like it's fantastic to know that like Nintendo still has all of this. Because like one of the biggest issues we have sort of with games is that like they aren't preserved, and you know, especially now when we're going into like sort of the Switch's future, we're looking at a lot of like live service games like Splatoon and Animal Crossing. And I think we can sort of find a little comfort in the fact that like they probably have all the previous versions saved. So even though, you know, Splatoon might have, you know, 60 more maps than it did when it launched, you know, we can be pretty sure that Nintendo has a record of every single, you know, version along the way, which, it again, like, doesn't really mean much for like the average consumer, but like, you know, 30, 40 years down the track when, you know, Nintendo might...
Someone hacks them.
Well, yeah. But like, you know, 30, 40 years down the track when, you know, Nintendo's looking to do something, you know, with Splatoon again, like that could be really useful information to have. So, yeah, it's a really, really difficult position. It's cool that we know all this stuff. It's just, I really wish that we'd been given this in some sort of way that wasn't like so ethically in the gray area.
Yeah. And I think like from a game preservation point of view, like it's obviously really cool to see this stuff, but I also hope people aren't making the argument that this happened because of game preservation. Like, right, I think these people, whoever did this hack and wherever this information came from, I really doubt that was their intent behind the entire hack, even though the result may be some of this stuff can be preserved.
Well, let's run down the list of some of the things that we hear. So, Ollie already mentioned the character model for Luigi in Super Mario 64 that wasn't found in the retail release. So, people, you know, who might have thought of mine the original game, you know, they wouldn't have found this information in there, but now that the source code has been leaked, it is in there. And was rumored for decades to be part of a multiplayer function that was ultimately removed during development. So, what's interesting to me about this is that the original Super Mario 64 did not have a multiplayer function, but then when it got remade for the DS, it did have a multiplayer function which had Luigi, Yoshi, and Wario in it. So obviously, they weren't able to implement that function of the game back in 1996 or whatever. Then in 2004, when the game got remade for the DS, they did include that in the end. So, you know, it's just another one of those things where Nintendo had something going in the cooker and then they just decided to kill it and then brought it back in a new way, you know, some significant time later. There was also the source code for Star Fox 2, which showed that there were human sprites, sprites for a human character among the main cast. This also contains the Winter CES 1995 demo of the game, which was the only publicly seen version of the game until its official release on the Super Nintendo Mini in 2017 after the game's completion and subsequent cancellation prior to the N64's release. So, people, you know, a lot of retro gamers and things like that knew of Star Fox 2, you know, well after it was cancelled and things, but there wasn't really anything, any sort of proof other than this CES demo from 1995 that just wasn't made public. So there were always rumors about that game, despite the fact that it got cancelled. But, you know, then the game got released and now that specific demo has been found, which is really interesting. Are you guys familiar with all these things that happened surrounding Star Fox 2 back in the mid-90s?
It's sort of like there was a lot of talk about it, like when the Super Nintendo Mini released. But I mean, like that was 3 years ago and, you know, this year has been 10 years long, so.
I think Star Fox 2, sure, for me when I was a kid, and this is revealing my age because I definitely grew up during this time. Yeah, it was always one of those things that you saw in like a magazine, like it was a coming, here's some weird like screenshot that we've seen or some art. And it was meant to be this pretty big leap from Star Fox 1 in regards to like performance and like a little bit better graphics and how the game played. And it would have been really interesting to see that type of like jump, but it just, I guess, fell by the wayside with PlayStation coming out and Nintendo 64 coming out. I guess a lot of that stuff probably moved into the live at war space.
Yeah, well, the game was basically famously cancelled because the N64 was on the way, it was coming along. And Nintendo was just basically like, oh, this game doesn't look like, you know, doesn't look that great compared to what the Nintendo 64 can do, so let's just kill it, which was really sad. But then it got new life on the Super Nintendo Mini, and then it came to Nintendo Switch Online and is part of that deal now. So there is that. Another aspect that got leaked was a whole bunch of prototype Pokemon. No, sorry, was the prototype Pokemon MMO game that was in development, well, pitched and then slightly in development in 2004 by a Chinese software company called IQ, which involved connecting a GBA to a PC. So that was a really interesting thing, considering Nintendo was very, you know, apprehensive about taking anything online in the early 2000s, the GameCube era and things, even though they did have an online service, you know, it didn't really amount to much ultimately. So it was interesting that they were at least giving a little bit of attention to bringing Pokemon into the MMO space in 2004. There were also some dungeon assets from the cancelled Zelda project, codenamed UraZelda, which Michael mentioned earlier, which was intended for the 64DD expansion that never released outside of Japan. There was also an early build of Pilot Wings, instead called Dragonfly, which was less a flight sim and more an aerial battle game. Now, this one took me by surprise. I didn't know this at all, but apparently a lot of people did know about this one. Are you guys familiar with Dragonfly?
No, I saw like a whole bunch of discussion about this, you know, around it. I didn't realize that it was, you know, linked to Pilot Wings. Like,
yeah, I know, right?
That's just crazy, because like Pilot Wings, like, you know, when you look back on it, you know, it's a pretty simple game, but it's one of those things where it's like this, it felt like a really developed product. So, you know, that it was so drastically different in earlier stages of development is just kind of crazy to me.
I think also just like how completely different of a game it is. Like if you think of Pilot Wings, it's so peaceful. You're around an island, you're jumping in a hopper and flying a plane somewhere, or some like crazy combat, like aerial combat game. Like I feel like someone just halted this project. I'm like, no, completely start again. It's very, very strange to see.
Yeah, I haven't looked into it or anything like that, but just off the top of my head, pure speculation, might have been the case that because it was to show off, you know, their fancy Mode 7 programming engine, but then they ended up developing the Super FX chip, which was what Star Fox took advantage of. So maybe that's where they kind of shifted their attention in that case from like a dogfight sort of sim, or sorry, like, you know, an aerial combat sim into more of a dogfighting kind of thing with Star Fox, but who knows? There was also an alpha version of Mario Kart 64 using Super Mario Kart assets and source code. This one was kind of interesting to me. Sprites of Link from a cancelled Zelda 3 or Zelda 2 remake, speculated to be meant for the Satellaview service, which was that satellite-based sort of pseudo-internet system that was only in Japan that, you know, was time-based, like, you know, certain times of the week or something, you could switch onto this satellite service and play these games between, you know, the hours of like 5 and 8 p.m. or something like that. And then that's it. They were just gone from your Super Nintendo. But this specific leak here of Link from the game dressed him in a red tunic and even had blood on his sword, which is, you know, kind of against Nintendo's family-friendly image. So I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, walking around with the blood of like Octoroks all over you and things.
And I think that's like particularly interesting because like the first Zelda game did get sort of a remake on Satellaview. So it was pretty clear that like they were intending to sort of, you know, continue that series. But I will find it very funny that like it shows blood on his sword, because quite notably in the Switch version of Skyrim, you can get the Master Sword, and it is the only weapon on the game that blood cannot adhere to. So it will never be bloodied up, because I guess Nintendo like asked them to not get blood on the Master Sword. So I think it's really interesting that we're seeing like this sprite with blood on his sword when, you know, even today that's not something that, you know, Link's allowed to do.
That's really funny. Plus there were also various early Pokemon designs and sprites as well. Some of them look gimpy as all heck, so go nuts and have a look at those, I guess. But, you know, is that kind of worth having a look at? Plus there were just many other things that were also leaked. So as Michael mentioned earlier, there's still likely to be a lot more to come out of this. So you know, follow it up or don't follow it up, depends on where you sort of sit on the ethical side of this kind of thing. But it's very interesting, nonetheless. All right. GigaLeak over. Quite a big discussion point. Ollie, you can take the reins on this story.
All right. So, I think it was like 2 days ago at the time of recording, Animal Crossing New Horizons got its second wave of summer updates. As we know, the first wave added, like, Pirate Gulliver and a few other things.
Gulliver!
And this added a fireworks festival, which is just a cute little thing that happens, you know, on every Sunday in August. You can, you know, go into the plaza and set off some fireworks and even create your own fireworks designs. Notably, one of the few times that Isabel is allowed outside of the town centre. So, you know, good for her. But more importantly, it added island backups. This is going to be quite a point of contention for a lot of people. I know, like, Michael and I have been talking about this a lot, with maybe some not-so-nice language attached. Because just the way that Nintendo's gone about it is incredibly frustrating. So, yes, Animal Crossing New Horizons has cloud saves now. Kind of. it doesn't work in the same way that cloud saves work on every other Switch game. You have to enable it in-game, and then through some sort of magic, it'll upload those when you exit the game. The backing up process is fine, like, you know, whatever. Obviously, they can't do it through the Switch firmware because, you know, cloud saves are handled differently for this game than all other games. It's the restoring process that is kind of just the most inane thing I've seen from Nintendo in, like, quite some time. So I tested this. I downloaded Animal Crossing New Horizons again on my Switch Lite. It's normally only on my Switch because I usually just use my Switch Lite for offline games. So I re-downloaded it. I thought I'll back up my island on my main Switch and see if I can restore it on my Switch Lite. Because Nintendo Australia actually gave the whole process for restoring a save file. And none of the other Nintendo branches have done that, so we thought, like, maybe Nintendo's just, you know, slipped up a little bit and said, you know, here's all the instructions to do it. Because it seems like in every other region you have to contact Nintendo support to even get those instructions. Unfortunately, it does not work. It probably does work, it's just it doesn't work without first contacting Nintendo support. And this is sort of where it's really frustrating, because obviously, like, we're lucky enough to live in a country that does have Nintendo support, although it is currently not available via phone because of, you know, the whole COVID-19 situation. So, you know, that is something we can do if, you know, your console is lost or stolen or damaged. You know, we can contact Nintendo support, but there are a lot of countries that, you know, officially have a Nintendo presence but don't have Nintendo support. I think I mentioned in the Slack there was a whole list of them, but, like, basically everywhere in South America and a lot of places in Southeast Asia, they all have an official Nintendo presence. So Nintendo is officially there selling consoles, selling games through official means, but they have no support network there. So if you live in one of those countries where, you know, there's no support line, you're kind of just out of luck here if your console gets damaged or stolen or, you know, or broken in any way. Your island's just gone forever. So it's, like, I understand what they were trying to do. Like, they tried to have this, you know, only be associated with the process of, you know, repairing or replacing your console. But I think, like, it doesn't hurt anyone in any way to have, you know, the backups just user accessible. Like, I don't understand why they've decided to say, like, no, you can't get your save data, you know, you can't get your island that you've spent 300 hours on. You're, like, you're not allowed to have that back until you, you know, contact Nintendo support. Especially because, you know, every other game, you can do that. Like, you don't have to contact Nintendo support if, you know, your Super Mario Odyssey save data is lost. You can just, you know, press plus on the menu icon and download it yourself. So, I don't know. It's really frustrating, and I'm sure Michael has a lot more to say about it, because Oh man.
You've covered the vast majority of it, but yeah, I totally agree. Like, I can't see why today in 2020 there is this insane and inane process to restoring your data. Like, it doesn't have to be like this. And we've discussed it many, many times where this problem that they have is a problem of their own creation. They own the systems. They design the systems around cloud backups and the way these types of things work. And they've created this problem themselves. But instead of fixing those systems in the background to support a normal cloud backup process that would work for Animal Crossing, they've instead designed a completely other system around backing up cloud saves just for this one game. It is probably the most Nintendo outcome of any type of process that I've seen in a while. I've said a million times before that this is a solved problem. Cloud backups and security of your console, and the way this type of works. Other consoles have been doing it for many, many years. I don't understand why Nintendo can't just pick up the slacks and get behind this type of stuff and design the systems better to support their consumers better. Because I shouldn't need to call up Nintendo support to get a card save for a game that I have. It's just, it's really, really dumb.
Yeah, and it was crazy enough that we had to wait, 18 months to even have cloud saves in the first place. That's something that should have really been there at launch, because, we didn't really have a Nintendo Online system at launch, which just seems crazy for something that launched in, the 2017. Like, why would that not be there? I don't know. You can't use it to transfer. Like, this is the thing. Like, we know that a transfer tool is coming at some point later. But for people who, want to update their consoles, very good example of this, Daniel Vukovic, founder of the website that we're talking about today, bought an Animal Crossing special edition console, the second time round. Because, obviously they sold out in moments in the first time around. But he can't use it right now because he can't transfer his Animal Crossing Island onto it because there's no way to do that. He joked on Twitter that, if he has to, have his old console, fake stolen in order to get his Animal Crossing save data across, then, he will. But, people shouldn't have to do that. They shouldn't have to, call up Nintendo support and pretend that they've, been the victim of a crime in order to transfer their save data. That's sort of where we are right now.
It also worries me, the consequences of those actions. Because, you don't know what Nintendo will or might do on the back end once you tell them that a console has been stolen or lost. Are they going to blacklist the system, from going online because you've told them that it's lost?
That's the thing. When I was doing the testing on my Switch Lite, I was, joking in the Vuk Slack about watch this, blacklist my old console and I won't be able to capture any video because all of my stuff will be on my Switch Lite now. We don't know what will happen, and we won't know what will happen until somebody actually does it. And I don't know, I don't think anybody really wants to be that sacrificial lamb.
Oh, for sure.
It's a huge problem, is it? It's a huge problem, isn't it? It's almost like you have to ask Nintendo permission to access your own stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of the times. Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And like you say, Michael, they're all problems of Nintendo's own design. For whatever reason, they create their own problems. Everyone else has this fixed. The problem with having your own accounts on multiple systems and things like that, Xbox figured that out with the Xbox 360 at launch. They figured out how to transfer gamer tags so you can have your purchases carry over and only you have access those purchases. Nintendo took forever to figure that out. And even now, it's still kind of really finicky to do and doesn't really work a whole lot. I don't know, man. It's two steps forward, 18 steps backwards every time. It's crazy.
Yeah, even though there's this mental distinction Nintendo between backing up your island and transferring it onto a console, why is that a difference? It's the same thing.
Yeah, because ultimately it's going to be basically the same process. It seems weird to me that they'd make a distinction at all between them because transferring your data between consoles is exactly the same as backing up and restoring it elsewhere. Like, why is there, you know, another tool coming that'll be completely different from the tools we currently have to do this? Like, it seems like more work for them. So, like, I don't understand why, you know, they would, first of all, you know, design these systems in such a way that they have to be constantly working around them. And, like, second of all, like, make it a really difficult process, because, like, you know, they've made a work for themselves, not just like in having to develop a new tool, but like now they have to increase their capacity for support, because the only way to get your Animal Crossing save data is, you know, to call them up. So, like, they're going to have support in every single country, just like lambasted with calls, because they didn't want the user to be able to do it themselves. Like, that's just like, it's completely nonsensical.
Well then, let's pull ourselves out of that one. You can see that the conversation is just getting a little dire and we're all just getting a little bit frustrated. Let's move over to some slightly happier news or more uplifting. No, we're still spending a lot of money. What am I talking about? Let's move over to the Analog Pocket, which is officially coming out in May 2021 with pre-orders available from August 4th. So tomorrow, if you're listening to this on the day of release, or today, if you're listening to it the day after, from 1 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. So get those fingers ready. Some great features of the Analog Pocket are, it has native support for all eras of Game Boy cartridges via FGPA, which is basically no software-based emulation, which we're going to get Michael to explain to us shortly. It'll also support other cartridges such as Game Gear, Neo Geo Pocket Color, and Atari Lynx with the help of adapters for those cartridges. It also sports a 3.5 color LCD with 615 pixels per inch at a resolution of 1600 by 1440. So that way you get those nice, crisp, you know, one-bit Game Boy games, basically. It also has, for the musicians out there, the electronic musicians, it also has built-in nanoloop software for sequencer-based chiptune composition and MIDI interfacing. So you can hook up your, you know, MIDI-based keyboards and other instruments and things like that. The console will be priced at $278 Australian for the console and $138 for the dock, which connects to your TV via HDMI, and you can play those handheld games on the TV. And those prices don't include shipping at this point. So just very, very quickly, Michael, can you just run us through what FGPA means and why it's significant to emulation these days?
All right. So first off, it's FPGA. So we've got a bit of a typo in the doc there.
Oh, whoops.
That's okay. So I want to be very clear with my language here, because I feel like there's a lot of contention around FPGAs and if it is emulation and if it isn't. And I feel like no matter what I say, someone's going to call me out, so I'm just ready for it. So FPGA stands for Field Programmable Gate Array, and it is a piece of hardware that developers use to most of the time prototype hardware chips before they go into mass production. So in this particular case, we're taking advantage of that programmability using something called HDL, which allows people who know HDL, which is not like a normal type of programming language, to basically program the way a chip or certain chips or many, many chips work on this one piece of hardware. So in this particular case, Analog has a gentleman by the name of Kevin Horton, or Kevtris, as he's known to the internet. He's very well versed in the way FPGAs work and programming them. And through basically researching these chips, decapping them, studying their hardware through like logic processes, he figures out and programs a perfect or almost perfect replica of these chips in hardware. So a lot of people just like to call it hardware emulation. And the reason why a lot of people really enjoy this is that it takes away any other type of layers that might interfere in the process, mainly making it a very low latency type of emulating, which in the retro world is what people look for. Because the majority of the time, these games were meant to run on a CRT, and CRT has very low response times. So a perfect example of that would be something like Punch-Out on NES, which is known for its very frame-perfect punches that you need to require to beat the game. So anything that lowers that type of latency in regards to game playing is what people are trying to get out of this. And the fact that we are at a point where consumers can purchase these chips in hardware at a reasonable cost and allowing us to play multiple generations of Game Boy games is a pretty awesome place to be. I'm very excited for this to come out in the future. Unfortunately, delayed is meant to come out this year, but coming out next year in 2021.
How about you, Ollie? Are you excited for this one? Are you planning on picking it up?
Oh, I've been in two minds about this for a while. it is very expensive. But like also, you know, provided the shipping isn't too bad and like that remains to be seen, previous products from Analog have had just kind of insane shipping to Australia. So, you know, not looking forward to that. But you know, like it's like one of those things where it's like, I could, you know, put the money into, you know, completely revamping a Game Boy Advance, like a Game Boy Advance SP, like AGS 101, for example. Because, you know, I'm not really interested in, you know, the Game Gear or the Neo Geo Pocket Color or anything like that. But on the other hand, I am a musician, and good lord, the MIDI interfacing sounds incredible. But, like, the problem with that is that, like, it has, like, this amazing feature where you can, like, link up a whole bunch of the analog pockets to, you know, have multiple layers of your MIDI interfacing. And it's like, you know, I can barely afford one, like, and here I am like tempted to get like two or three just to see what I can do with it. It's a really fantastic device, and I think somebody said in the Discord that like they wished that Nintendo had worked with Analog to do these kinds of things, because like that'd be absolutely amazing. Like, and like they've done, you know, the Super NT in the past and the NES one that I'm just completely
NT
forgetting.
Mini.
The NT Mini, that's the one. And like these are just really incredible ways to play old Nintendo games. And you know, if you think like Nintendo, you know, teamed up with Analog to do this, then like there wouldn't be any doubt about like, you know, is this going to live up to scratch? Because Nintendo has all that documentation about these chips and all of that. So, you know, like obviously it's going to be like basically flawless, because you know, Kiptris does things just to the insane degree. But yeah, I think like it's definitely pricey, but like if you're really big into like Game Boy games and sort of that retro scene, then like it's impossible to pass up. Like it's such a fantastic product.
Yeah, for me, being a little bit of a emulation enthusiast, I mean, basically, for example, whenever like a Nintendo console reaches its life expectancy, whenever a Nintendo console reaches the end of its life, I usually go back and just hack it and turn it into an emulation machine. So I did that with my Wii, did that with my Wii U, did that with my Super Nintendo, just to make sure that, you know, I can still play some of these older games and things like that. And usually, like some of the more recent hardware do run games better than previous ones. Like, you know, the Nintendo Mini runs 16-bit and 8-bit games way better than the Wii does, which is great. I even recently went back and hacked my Vita so that I can try and play my old Game Boy games as well, because, you know, I don't have a souped-up Game Boy Advance with better lighting and things like that. So I did it to my Vita so I could go back and play things like Metroid Fusion with, you know, a nice screen for a change. So, you know, I'm no stranger to that type of thing, and I'm kind of unashamedly in support of that kind of thing. But the Analog Pocket, on the other hand, really changes things up for me, because it puts everything into one device that, you know, presumably will run really well, seems to have a great battery, and can also be docked with the television. So I'm kind of keen on this. But yeah, the price is kind of like the sticking point for me, like, because, you know, as you've already mentioned, Ollie, like the shipping will probably be astronomical, which would just, you know, make things a little more uncomfortable. I mean, for the dock and the system itself, that already puts it up to what, like $406 or something like that, or more. Plus, you know, the shipping. Say if the shipping's between $50 to $80, then that's already almost $500 just to play the system. But you know, compare that to the Switch when it came out, I guess. Yeah, and the fact that it can also natively run things like the Game Gear, which I used to have a Game Gear, but I can't remember for the life of me what game or games I had on it, because we ended up selling it so that way I could get Super Mario Land 2, which I ultimately lost anyways because I'm an idiot. So, you know, just a downward spiral on that story. But yeah, I think it's really great that there are devices that are still being made now to play these older games natively in a legal sense as well. So, you know, it does play those cartridges. It does play the official games. It doesn't rely just on like piracy or ROMs and things like that. So, yeah, and even the fact that it has Nanoloop as well. Like, I've always been interested in getting into some, you know, sequencing and things like that, some chiptune music, but didn't really know where to start. So something like this is kind of exciting for someone like me who's looking to do that and finally get some use out of my MIDI keyboard that I've had just sitting around collecting dust.
I will say that, like, there are a few drawbacks for this. Like, it's probably just me, but, like, the fact that there's no, you know, sort of wireless multiplayer between these things is, like, a bit of a drawback for me.
Yeah, it plays via the link cable,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so, and you have to use the link cable as well, which is a little bit disappointing because, like, in lieu of, like, wireless communication, I would have really liked for that USB-C port on the bottom to be used as a link cable. But I guess, like, you know, I think Michael said to me the other day that, like, it's probably just, you know, a pure compatibility thing. Like, you know, if you're going through the link port, then you know that everything's going to behave the right way. And, you know, you're sort of trying to translate that, you know, into USB-C and then across the cable and then out of USB-C back into, you know, the link protocol. It's probably going to introduce some sort of problem. So, you know, it's a little bit disappointing, but, you know, it's good to be aware of those drawbacks.
This is a very specific question about, I think it was Pokemon Fire Red and Leaf Green, because they were compatible with the wireless communicator on the GBA, yeah. Right? So how would they work with something like this? Were they also compatible with the link cable?
They were compatible with the link cable, but there were some features that could only be done through the wireless adapter. So I'm not really sure how that works with this. How that goes.
So the wireless adapter hooks up through,
because there were a few other games that were compatible with the wireless connector as well, I think. So that'd be interesting. Or even e-reader. Can the e-reader work with this thing?
Yeah, I mean, like, can we plug things into the link
hook
port?
Up through the link port, right? So I think it just really depends on how they've designed the bottom of the console, because all those devices have those little like tabs that hook into the console.
Yeah.
So if they get in the way, probably not, because there's not going to be, I doubt there's any type of, actually, we can just check. I don't know why we've been discussing this. If there's those little tabs at the bottom of the pocket, I would say almost certainly. As long as it can plug into the port, I think it should work as a GBA. And that's,
and I mean,
the
like,
entire point.
Failing that, you could always, you know, like, just snap off those little pegs, right? Like,
yes, 100%. Let's just throw some irreplaceable old hardware for this new thing.
When in doubt, just break it. All right. Let's move into our final news topic this week. So this week's just been all about news. I think, Ollie, maybe you should take this one, because I think you know a little bit more about
this. Yeah, this is my wheelhouse. My favorite day of the quarter is coming up. So on August 6th, which I believe is this coming Friday, Thursday, one of those days.
Should be like, yeah, something like
Thursday.
Thursday, there you go. So this coming Thursday is the quarter two financial release for Nintendo. So, you know, it sounds... Actually, no, it's the quarter one financial release. Don't know. Okay, I got a little bit confused there. Because it's quarter two for, like, you know, every other business in the world, but quarter one for Nintendo, who starts their quarter in March. So this will be from the 1st of April up to the 30th of June. Basically a big old document of what's sold and how much. We're expecting to see a pretty high increase in Switch console sales, because, you know, yeah, at the end of their last quarter,
pandemic,
yeah, I mean, like, the pandemic happened and there were no consoles for a while, so they've made a whole lot more stock available, and we're expecting the numbers to basically just be gangbusters. We should see an increase in Animal Crossing sales for obvious reasons. Like, we only captured like 11 days in the last release, and it sold like 14 million copies. but perhaps the most interesting thing here is that there is the potential for future releases to be detailed. Now, I would expect that Nintendo wouldn't go into a financials meeting because, you know, they have to talk to investors and, you know, answer questions about what's coming up. So I would not expect them to go into this financials meeting without having something announced for the rest of the financial year. And obviously there's still 9 months of the financial year left. So I'm fully expecting either, you know, in the coming days or just before the financials go up, for some sort of announcement to be made, whether that'll be in the form of a direct or just, you know, Nintendo dropping stuff on Twitter like they did with Paper Mario. It's hard to say, but I would fully expect to get some sort of announcement before the financials go up, because otherwise Nintendo is going to have a whole bunch of angry investors asking, you know, why they haven't done anything for 2 months and why they don't have anything planned for the next 9 months. I mean, it's financials, so it's not going to appeal to a lot of people. A lot of people just don't really give a damn that, you know, Nintendo sold, you know, 6 million Switches or whatever. But I think it's really interesting to see these numbers sort of in the wake of all the announcements of, you know, the PS5 and the Xbox Series X. And we're seeing a lot of announcements for those consoles. So it'll be interesting to see sort of how Nintendo responds to that kind of thing. As we've said before, it's probably in Nintendo's best interest to position themselves as not competing against those consoles, because, you know, obviously they can't compete. They're offering a completely different experience. It's a handheld more than it is a console. So it's really in Nintendo's best interest to be seen as not competing, but that doesn't mean that, like, they can, you know, slack off and just not release anything for the rest of the year. Because, you know, we will start to see a drop in console sales if new announcements aren't made. And I think investors are going to be really holding Nintendo's feet to the fire over this. So look forward to that on the 6th of August. I usually set aside the whole day. It comes up at like 5 p.m., but I usually set aside the whole day just because things tend to come out a little bit earlier. And we will have an article with basically everything interesting about it pretty much the moment that it becomes available.
Damn, Ollie, I didn't realize you were such a fiend for financials.
No joke, it's like every 3 months I get excited because it's like, this is financials day. It's like legit my favorite part of working on books is the financials.
Oh my God, someone's going to meme that one. That's great. I love that. I love that so much. All right, well, let's make a prediction right now. Let's put our lives on the line and make a prediction. How many copies do we think Ring Fit Adventure sold worldwide? I'll go first. I'm going to estimate 14, because that's all that was available.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Is that, like, we won't actually know the numbers unless they sold over a million. So, I mean,
right. Have they made over a million? I think that's the bigger question.
I think they definitely have. Like, it's in stock in a lot of places now. I know you can get it on Amazon Australia right now, so, you know, it's...
So what you're saying is if we don't see Ring Fit Adventure on that list, then I'm not incorrect. It could be 14.
that's true. If Ring Fit Adventure isn't on the list, then, you know, we have to assume that it's only 14.
Ring Fit Adventure is very interesting. I'm very keen.
One of those games where I was like, oh yeah, people will buy this. Like, it's one of those Nintendo fitness things that people will enjoy. Then, much like Animal Crossing, the pandemic hit, and all of a sudden, it was like, top 10, this game must be played by every human on the planet, and they literally cannot make enough plastic circles to support this process.
And I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, it was outselling, like, some pretty big hitters, like, earlier in the year, because, you know, the pandemic hit. So, like, I don't know, we'll see how it goes, I guess. I'm expecting it to breach at least a million, but, you know, 14 could be it too.
So what you're saying is our prediction is between 14 and 1 million.
Yeah,
somewhere there.
Okay,
somewhere
perfect. There. This is the reason why people listen to this this podcast.
Yeah, exactly right. For all of our hard-hitting analysis. All right, games we're playing. Who wants to go first?
I mean, I'll give it a go. Okay. I've been playing a lot of PC games recently because I have a new graphics card coming soon, and I just really want to play games on PC, even though I don't actually have my new graphics card yet. So I played.
You just want to get yourself hyped up on how terrible everything looks now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I want to like play all of the games in my Steam library. And like, wow, this runs terribly. So when I install my new graphics card, I was like, wow, that was worth the money, and not like, you know, cry myself to sleep because I spent $900 on something I didn't really need. So
understandable.
You know, Michael and I played a bit of the Fall Guys technical beta.
Yeah, that was really
which
fun.
Was pretty fun. Has a few issues that need to be resolved, and I think it'll live or die based on how big its player base is. But
well,
you know,
it's free on PS Plus, so
yeah, so
initially it's
at least
be
on
big.
On PlayStation it'll be pretty big. I think they have
it's crossplay though.
All right, so
yeah,
fingers crossed, because it is really fun, and you know they have a few things to iron out, but we had a lot of fun with it. Also been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey because I am a glutton for punishment and need to visit every single icon on the map. That's
how
it goes.
Annoying.
You have to do it. If you play an Assassin's Creed game, you're going to be visiting every single icon. There's no way around it. other than that, I've been playing CrossCode on Switch, which I'll get into in a little bit, and Paper Mario the Origami King, which Michael and I will have a little discussion about that in a bit.
Yeah,
we'll definitely have that open as a special segment. Michael, what have you been playing?
So might as well start off with Paper Mario. So I loved it. I played it over the weekend of launch and finished it. So just over 3 days, I just like hammered it completely. That's great. Like Ollie said, playing the Fall Guys beta on PC, which is really, really interesting. And then sprinkled in and out between that, I've been playing a bit of Valorant and Overwatch on PC as well. Just to keep my first-person shooters' skills in check and realize how terrible I am. And other than that, actually been dabbling in some old GameCube stuff. Just like trying out some of the old content in that, getting ready for... I have like every once in a while I have some like Nintendo nights at my place. So trying to find like really awesome like party games or games that we can play all together with four players. There's stuff like Beach Spikers, which I'm a huge fan of. Such a dumb Sega volleyball game, but for some reason is so insanely fun to play with a whole lot of people. Any of the Mario parties, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance, which is a fun Baldur's Gate co-op game, which we can play together. But yeah, trying to find all that old content because I'm old.
Nice. That's cool. So me, I've been playing Ghost of Tsushima, which came out a couple of weeks ago. Really enjoying that game. It's so beautiful. It's not even just necessarily like graphically, you know, in terms of like the amount of pixels and all the effects and stuff. Like, I just really love the way the game looks from an artistic standpoint. Like the colors in that game, the open vistas, the sort of just imagery of just flowers and petals just all over the place blowing in the wind and stuff. It just looks amazing. It's such an amazing like dream looking, like a very surreal kind of looking game. And I've also finally finished Final Fantasy VII Remake over the last week. My girlfriend and I finally returned to that one and finished it off. Man, the way that game ends was completely unexpected to me. I did not see it going that way. And I won't spoil it or anything, but it was to the point where I just didn't understand what the F was going on. It was just absolutely bonkers. And I had to look up like three different analyses videos that all explained the same thing. And at that point, I was like, oh my God, okay, this is going a completely different direction than I thought it was going to go.
It's one of those things where it's like, if you haven't played, you know, the original Final Fantasy VII, it's confusing as hell. If you have played the original Final Fantasy VII, it's even more confusing. Like,
exactly. Yeah, that's exactly the thing. And like, it got to like the end, like the last, sorry, the penultimate boss fight, where it just absolutely just turned into Kingdom Hearts. Yeah. I was like, what game am I playing right now? Like, this is so stupid. But, you know, then the ending came and I was kind of like, all right, I'm all in on this now. I don't care. Like, sure. Like the game by the end, I will say that it does deviate from the original. Especially considering I played the original just before the game came out. So it's still fresh in my mind. And the fact that it deviates, like, I'm of two minds. Like, yeah, that's great that it is doing its own thing. It's a very Japanese thing to do. Like, if it was an American, if it was a Western developer, they would have just stuck to making a carbon copy original, just like Disney does with their animated films and their live action ones. But Japanese companies seem to take a lot more risks when it comes to remastering things, and they like to deviate and change things up, which, you know, I do appreciate. But in the same space, I'm just kind of like, oh, you know, I just wanted Final Fantasy VII, but like, you know, enormously beautiful. So
here's another VOOCast exclusive prediction. what year and or century will you be playing the second part, do you think?
Oh, man. My grandchildren will finally get to the end before I do.
Oh, man. It's one of those things where it's like, you know that, like, because Square Enix is heading it up and Tetsuya Nomura is the lead, like, it could be, you know, 2 weeks from now that it gets a surprise release, or, you know, in 11 years time we'll be, you know, watching increasingly nonsensical trailers about it with no release date set. So
yeah, it's absolutely going to turn it. Is it going to come out on PS4?
I honestly don't think it will. I think they'll probably just skip it and go to PS5.
I think it's going to absolutely turn into Kingdom Hearts and just get into some weird stuff, but you know, I'm here for it, whatever. Hey everyone, this is Angelo, sneaking in from the edit room, just letting you know that the next 12 minutes or so, there will be some spoilers for Paper Mario, The Origami King. So if you want things unspoiled for now, be sure to head forward to the 1 hour, 8 minute mark. I'll see you there.
All right, so let's talk about Paper Mario, The Origami King. I will give you a big warning. This is incredibly spoilery. So if this is, you know, if you haven't played Origami King yet, or, you know, you're very early in the game, probably just don't listen to this part. Last warning, this will get spoilery. We're about to talk about some real big spoilers. So, here we go. Let's talk about Bobby.
Oh my because, lord.
Holy crap. So, a little bit of background. Most people listening to this will have played it, but, you know, if they haven't, Bobby is a Bob-omb character. His name's not really Bobby. It's a little bit disrespectful to continue calling him Bobby. But, you know, we're going to call him Bobby anyway. Bobby is a character that you meet fairly early on in Paper Mario, The Origami King. You're, you know, on your travels going about, and you come across an amnesiac Bob-omb. He... obviously, as an amnesiac, doesn't remember a single thing about anything, but he agrees to go along with you, and you have all sorts of fun little adventures. You take him to a theme park, you know, take down some baddies with him. Going into, you know, after you defeat one of the big streamer bosses, you're on your way to the next one, and your origami companion, Olivia, gets sort of trapped under a gigantic boulder. And after the one little journey, just the worst thing in the world happens.
Let's just put into context, from that boulder, you already have your cogs turning in your head about, like, oh god, what is going on here? And they sort of tease it to you, but then take that tease away, like, oh no, like, it was just a weird tease. What you think's going to happen isn't going to happen. It's totally fine, right? And then your adventure continues.
Because that's the thing, right? Like, Olivia gets trapped under this boulder, and then they're like, okay, I know where this is going. I know what's going to happen. Like, I mean, he's a Bob-omb. There's a rock that needs to be broken. Like, I can put two and two together. And then Bobby's like, you know, I know something that can help here. You know, there's an item stored on a cruise ship far away that... if we got to it, we could save Olivia. And it's like, well, okay, all right, maybe my adorable Bob-omb friend is going to be okay after all.
Yeah.
So you go to this cruise ship, you know, you defeat these enemies, and you learn a little bit about Bobby's backstory, which is just absolutely tragic, by the way. So, like, him and his friends, like all the other Bob-ombs, like, saved up their money and, like, all put together to go on a cruise ship.
On the Princess Peach, you know, aptly
named. On the Princess Peach, fantastic name for a cruise ship. Probably not something you want to be going on right now, but that's a story for another day.
I mean, so, the Princess Peach's journey is as disastrous as any other one. So
that's true. So, you know, while they were staying there, a big old squid, I think it was like a squid.
Yeah, it was a squid.
Like a kraken. Squid kind of thing. Very similar to, like, the squid in Super Mario Sunshine. Who knows if they're related. But a squid attacked basically all of the Bob-ombs, blew up trying to defend it, and Bobby got knocked into the sea. Which, you know, pretty sad backstory to begin with. So you head to this cruise ship, you take down the squid and you get the item. You open up this lockbox that only Bobby knows how to open, and he takes out a smaller lockbox, and it's like, well, this is, you know, a little bit concerning. You find your way back to the rock, and Bobby reveals that inside that lockbox is the fuse of his unfortunately deceased best friend. And he sticks the fuse in his head, says some real tragic stuff, and blows up the
bomb. It should be made clear at this point that as when you meet Bobby, he does not have a fuse in his head.
Yeah, so like, the entire time he doesn't have a fuse in his head, and like you don't really see any other bob bombs along the way, so it's like not really treated as like something a little bit weird or concerning.
When I first saw it, I actually thought it was just like a symbolic thing meant to represent his amnesia, like it's part of him.
Because like that sort of makes sense, right? Like he's a bob bomb without a fuse, which, you know, symbolically that's kind of cool to have that character be like an amnesiac. But yeah, so he does blow himself up and says some absolutely tear-jerking stuff before he does so. It's like we've talked about this a lot in DMs, like since it happened, because you finished it well before I did. It took me like another week after you finished it to get up to that point. But like it's absolutely incredible. Like something so dark and something so distressing is like not only in a Mario game, not only in like a spin-off of a Mario game that's, you know, pretty lighthearted otherwise.
Yeah.
But like this game in particular, like it's a PG rated game. And like, I don't know if I had children, if I would let them play that. Like, it's kind of insane. Like just how dark that scene is.
It's very dark. And like, I sort of, at this point, I feel like I've blanked it out a little bit, but from memory, it's like full on. You see it happen. It is graphic. And if correct me like, wrong, does it repeat? Does it go through
it does like that classic movie thing where it like shows you from like six or seven different angles, and like Mara, you're like in tears, like trying to like reach after Bobby, and it's like, what the hell is going on in this like cutesy little Mario game?
Totally. Like, it isn't, you're right. It isn't like Mario's just standing back and like it happens and then like, oh, whatever. Like Mario goes in to try and stop it and save his friend, and like fails, and you replay that moment like a few times. And when I first went through that, I had to stop playing the game. Like it affected me a lot. And I know that sounds really dumb, like it's just a cartoon like video game, but like as an adult, like these things have like serious consequences. These are things that happen to people that you know. And it's not,
I think like they did a really, really fantastic job of like that moment, because it wasn't like treated lightly. It was treated with the depth that like the death of a character should be treated with.
Correct. Including the little bit after that, which there's a lot of little bits after that where Mario's talking to Olivia and how distraught she is and Bobby's sacrifice. So it isn't treated lightly, but it's still, it's a very deep concept to have in a kid's game.
Yeah. And like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's not like an inherently bad thing to happen. Like, obviously, like it's absolutely heartbreaking,
totally.
But like it does like attribute like to the story quite a bit. And like, it's handled in such a way that like, you know, there are little bits after that, obviously, you know, with Olivia and all of that, and like the whole, you know, learning to move on, that is, I think, was like handled really well as well. Like they kind of make a point of saying like, you know, it's okay to be sad about this because like it's a sad thing to happen, but like, you know, that there's other things that you need to do, and it's time to keep moving. So I think they handled that really well. But like also, like, you know, they did put, it's gonna sound stupid, but like they put like little jokes into like Bobby's end dialogue, you know, so they said, you know, like, it's been a blast, which like, ooh, like,
yeah,
it hits hard, but like it's also like it's a bit of a like a jokey pun that is in tone with the rest of the game, so like,
yeah,
it's designed to like soften the blow a little bit, like no pun intended there, but
wow.
But yeah, it's just like, I mean, when he like takes the fuse out of the box, you know what's about to happen.
Yeah.
And like, even still, like 100% knowing that like Bobby was going to die in this moment, like I didn't believe that it would happen. Like somebody would come in and like stop him at the last second, or, you know, like Mario would find a bomb flower power up or something at the last second and stop it. So like the fact that they followed through and then they didn't cheapen it by like doing a fake out and I was like, oh, he's not actually dead.
Yeah.
Like it's, I think it's going to be like something that we look back on as like a really important part of like sort of Mario history, because like nothing like this has ever really happened before. And it's like the kind of storytelling that you don't expect from a Nintendo game at all.
Yeah. Nah, for sure. It's one of those things where just like when it happened, like I actually went to go, I picked up the game case. I was like, what is this game rated? I don't recall, like, is this PG? No joke.
Like, after it happened, like, I Googled it myself to see if it was, like, rated PG or M, because, like, I would expect this in an M-rated game, but, like, in a PG game, that just seems, like, so close to, like, the borderline of being okay, like...
Yeah, like, it comes off, like, and I just assume this is how the ratings board rated it, as just, like, cartoon violence, right?
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, like, I get it, it is cartoon violence in a way, but, like... They don't treat it like cartoon violence, though. That's the thing.
No. And, like, I'm assuming that the ratings board probably, like, looked at the submission, like, without the context of the rest of the game. Because, like, if it was just, like, you know, Bob that's friendly gets exploded, like, it, you know, that doesn't sound too bad. But, like, the fact that you've gone on this journey and, like, you've had all these, like, quiet moments with Bobby, you know, you sit on a park bench and he tells you about, like, you know, how the breeze makes him feel, and you go to the theme park and you learn that, like, you know, he's afraid of the dark, and like it's just like all these like little like humanizing moments that they added to like this cartoon Bob-omb that like really just like hits you hard when you finally get to that point, and then he's gone, and like like as you said, like I had to put it down after I played that and just like, you know, go hang and watch TV. Like, it was just too much. Like, I couldn't, like, go play another game. And, like, there was one point, like, just the other night, where I was like, well, I haven't saved since, like, before, like, Bobby died. Like, what if I just, like, stop playing and never save? So he's, like, always alive on my save file. Like, that's just stupid and irrational. But, like, they really make you feel for this Bob-omb.
Yeah, it was a fantastic character to have in this game. And very unexpected from a game that is pretty lighthearted. The writing in this game is fantastic. It's awesome.
Easily like one of like the writing team that did this game should absolutely be in charge of more things, because they knocked it out of the park.
Definitely,
just every single part of it is fantastic.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you've still not finished the game, right?
I haven't finished the game there.
Okay, cool. There are more moments to come, Ollie. I apologize.
Yeah, I have heard that, like, they're like, this is only the beginning. So
yeah,
looking forward to having the rest of me destroyed.
Now let's move into the eShop recommendations. So there's a whole lot of not much going on. Like, there is a lot on sale, but not a whole lot to talk about, unfortunately. But Ollie, you can start us off.
All right. So, you know, as per usual, every month, you know, there's Capcom stuff on sale, so, you know, check out the thing if you're a fan of Capcom sales, because there's just so much. All of the Mega Mans, all of the Resident Evils, like, just, it's all, like, 50% or more off, so grab that. Trine 4, which is a game that I reviewed for Vooks.net and is extremely good, is 60% off, which brings it down to about $28. If you didn't like Trine 2 and 3, but did like Trine 1, then Trine 4 is absolutely the game for you, because it just ignores that those middle two games happened at all. Pokken Tournament DX is currently 30% off, bringing it down to about $63. It has like a free period for Nintendo Switch Online members, but by the time this goes out, that will probably be more or less done. And also CrossCode, which is a absolutely fascinating little game made entirely in HTML5. It got an update a few days ago that, like, fixed all of the problems that the Switch version was having. So there's no more slowdown or anything like that. It's sort of like a cute little tough-as-nails, you know, top-down Zelda-ish adventure game. And generally just one of the best games I've played this year. So absolutely check that out. It's only $30. It's not on sale. I just had to mention it.
Well, alternatively, it's also free on Game Pass on Xbox and PC.
It is free on Game Pass
PC,
on
yeah.
Xbox and PC. So,
yeah, like, so that's where I'm going to be playing it.
Because it's extremely good.
Yeah, I'm very excited to finally get around to that one. Michael, what are your picks for this week?
So being more specific than Ollie with anything Capcom, specifically Okami for me, it's currently on sale, 50% off, $14.97. And it's just one of those games where I never owned a PS2. So I'd always fawn over these games that I could never play. It's like, oh man, that looks so sweet. I wish I could play it one day. And then Okami HD came out on PS3, PS4, and now Switch. And I highly recommend people playing it. It's a very, very beautiful game.
Awesome. My pick is a slightly more obscure one. It's Cinemora EX. Now, it's been a very long time since I played this game, so I don't remember the specifics of the story and stuff. I remember it had a bit of a darker story, but it excited me at the time because it was a really cool side-scrolling shoot-em-up game. You know, I really am into kind of those top-down side-scrolling shoot-em-ups, you know, just aerial combat kind of stuff, bullet hell type things. And this one really scratched that itch at the time when it came out. I think it was around 2012, 2013. I played it on the Vita, had a great time with it. Never really finished it though, but at the moment it is $9.99 on Switch, so that's 80% off. So it's a pretty good deal for that game. And it was I remember being a really good fun. Fortnite Forecast. Nothing really to look at here, but we will mention that because so Nintendo's financials are upcoming in a few days. We should be expecting some new announcements for that one. So there's that.
Yeah, and that should most likely be from both first parties, so Nintendo themselves, and third parties. I would be very surprised if we didn't get a release date for Bravely Default 2 sometime in the next week.
All right, well, that about wraps up this week's Vookcast. Be sure to visit the site www.vooks.net for all your Nintendo news, reviews, and everything in between. To keep up to date, follow the site on Twitter at vooks.net, all spelled out. Ollie, where can people find you online?
They can find me on Twitter, which is at Chocobalt, Chocobalt, or you can find me in the Discord, which is bit.ly/VooksDiscord.
Cool, and Michael, what about you?
You can also find me in the Vooks Discord, also on Twitter, at subelement, SubElement.
Cool. You can find me on Twitter at Mangello, that's MANJELL0. And I've also started streaming on Twitch and have no idea what I'm doing at the moment, so help me out by hitting me up. I'm Mangello Show. There's no zeros in that one, just all spelled out properly. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next fortnight. Bye-bye.